Welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report, back half of the show. And as promised, time to switch our direction, a little bit more technical in nature, looking at the broad markets, US and abroad, as well as some of the ETFs that I think you all, our listeners, closely follow. We're chatting right now with Dana Lyons, fund manager and editor of the Lyons Share Pro website. I'll post a link to the Lyons Share Pro website in the show notes on our website and through your podcast player. Dana, let's start off with the broad averages. Markets still hanging in there quite well. The S&P still over 6,000. We've even heard recently that this month we've seen a little bit more leadership or a little catch-up trade in the small cap stocks. But look, overall, with all the worries that we seem to have, and again, all the volatility that has come on the back of the current administration and different news on tariffs, seems like the market's starting to ignore some of them and, quite frankly, grind higher. We're not back to all-time highs for the S&P, but Dana, what do you think? Could the S&P be approaching those all-time highs? Do you think that's possible?
Yeah, not only possible, I think likely. And furthermore, I think it's like the S&P and other broad averages or even large cap averages are likely to move on to a new up leg. A healthy extension above those former highs might not happen right away. In fact, it'd be healthier if we did consolidate and trade around those former highs for a bit prior to attempting a breakout in that next up leg. If we do that, such a breakout would be tend to be more sustainable. But I do think that the data and our models suggest that's likely to happen. I think what we saw from off of those April lows was a lot of short covering initially, and then a lot of people chasing pretty much the FOMO trade because they missed the lion's share of that early move off of the lows. So, you know, the easy money, quote unquote, has been made now. Investors, especially in a lot of cash, are stuck with, do they go out and chase? Do they wait for a pullback, which really hasn't happened yet? You know, the strongest markets really don't let you in. So they're left in a quandary. But I think from our standpoint, the models that we operate on, I think we are set up in the intermediate term for another healthy upleg eventually.
Yeah, Dana, we were talking off mic about how the markets, especially in a bull market, tend to climb a wall of worry. And there was a lot of worry about a month or two ago. And as it's moved higher and higher, I think people have gotten stuck chasing. But there has been another phenomenon, and that is that out of some of the big tech leadership and communication leadership, some of that money seems to have rotated down into the small caps, into some of the mid caps, and into other sectors. And you said you're seeing relative strength in a number of different areas. Maybe highlight a couple of the areas you think look the strongest.
Yeah, sure. As you mentioned, there, it's always more constructive, and this is a big tenet of our risk model, to have as much of the market as broad of a rally as possible. The broader the rally, the more constructive and the more sustainable it is. And we're really seeing that in a lot of our breadth and internal indicators that might not be necessarily showing up in some of the small and mid-cap averages per se, but you look in some of the breadth and internal related stats and indicators, you're really seeing broad strength there, which is really the most important thing in, as far as we're concerned, in perpetuating this rally. So in terms of relative strength, we have broadened out from, you know, what we saw last summer, which was basically just a tech rally. We have seen some of those tech areas bounce back, even as some have fallen by the wayside. Some of the semiconductor space still lagging pretty badly, as well as some of the internet stocks. But we're seeing, for example, cybersecurity back up into new highs. One of our tech funds we've been in for a while, a tech dividend fund, has broken out back to a new all-time highs, and NASDAQ 100 in spitting distance too. And then outside of tech, you're seeing another solid array of areas that are set up for breakouts or have broken out and set up for further new highs. Something like the industrials, I think, is set up nicely. You have some of the financials, some of the areas in financials set up nicely. I think insurance led the way for a long time, has consolidated nicely over the last 6 months or so set up for another breakout. Aerospace defense has been a monster. Really got a little overextend. I wouldn't be chasing here, but that name has been great. And then, internationally, we've talked about it. Even more markets internationally set up for breakouts and new highs, or already are in new high ground. So the breadth of international strength is really another thing that buoys the potential for sustainable further highs here.
Where do you see the best opportunity internationally? It is something we've noted is that as much as the US markets have bounced back, international markets have bounced back even stronger and surpassed some of those levels from earlier this year. US markets haven't done that. So where still are some of the best opportunities internationally?
Yeah, I think right now, Europe is really leading the way. You've got either the broad European averages that look good, or even specific countries. Germany looks great. Italy is performing great. You have some of the smaller companies hit countries, some of the quote unquote pigs hitting new highs still. Greece, Spain looks good. Portugal. So across the continent, you have a nice breadth of countries that are really looking strong. And then elsewhere in the world, we've been following Argentina for a long time, has been a beast for a number of years. Japan is probably has a little bit of consolidation to do still after, finally last summer testing those highs from, 35 years ago, I guess. Finally getting back up there and testing those highs. So probably another year of maybe of consolidation, but that looks great long term. India looks great long term. The Japanese small caps may be poised for breakouts, prior to kind of like the Nikkei or some of the larger cap indices. So it's not hard. It's probably easier now than it has been a long time to kind of throw a dart at the globe and hit a market that's performing well. And even something like South Africa has been going bonkers. So a good, like I said, a good breadth in terms of countries that are performing well. And that always makes for, again, a stronger, more sustainable global rally.
Yeah, it's nice to see so many markets that are doing well and not just isolated to just the US stocks. And you made a great point off, Mike. I think it'd be worth reiterating for the audience here, Dana, and that is that in general, you don't like diversification for the sake of diversification, but you do like opportunities where there's relative strength in multiple markets, and so you can diversify into relative strength. Maybe unpack that nuance for people listening in.
Yeah, absolutely. So our philosophy when it comes to investment selection, i.e., where do we want to invest, is one of relative strength. So we want to really concentrate our portfolio in those areas that are performing the best, as opposed to just blankly diversifying across the market. Because if you do that, generally you get some areas performing well while others are not performing, and you really dilute your performance. So concentrate on those relative strength areas, really give you a chance to outperform the market. And at times, like last summer, our models were still positive, but the relative strength leadership was really narrowing into just those few NASDAQ or technology and AI areas of the market. So that's where most of our portfolio was concentrated, which is fine as long as the market holds up. But when you have narrow leadership, it's easier to take the market down. All you have to do is knock down a couple of those sectors or knock down a couple of those stocks, and basically the foundation is wiped away from the rally. So in the case where you have really a wider, a broader array of relative strength names, a broader array of sectors and segments in the market that are performing well, now it creates a stronger foundation for the market, stronger foundation for a continued rally. It's harder to really tear down the market because you tear down one or two sectors and you've got a number of other areas or markets that are really still performing well, holding the market up in general. So I think that's where we are right now. I think in the near term, we're certainly a bit extended from a momentum standpoint and from a sentiment standpoint, but from just a relative strength standpoint, like you mentioned, we have enough areas leading the way where we can spread our portfolio around to those various relative strength names, be confident that the market in general is going to hold up, even if we have one or two of these areas take a breather.
All right, Dan, let's switch our focus to commodities because it does seem like commodities have gotten a bit more focused from investors. So, broadly, I'm going to throw it over to you. Look, gold has been actually kind of boring, but I say boring, it's still at $3,400 as we record this, but hasn't really done much in the last couple months, more range bound. Silver started to play some catch up. That's over $36 right now. Copper also kind of in a range, but the higher part of its range, close to $5. Crude has recently finally got back within that long-term range that it's been in at about $68. Natural gas, that's also been range bound. Uranium's been doing better. In terms of commodity sector broadly, where has your attention?
Yeah, and I think that's more the nature of commodities. You know, they're going to be more stochastic, like they're going to be more range bound versus, you know, equities, which theoretically are, you know, have limited, unlimited upside. Certainly, that's not true from a practical standpoint, but theoretically, but commodities more range bound typically. So when you get a move like gold, like we've had in gold, really an exponential type of near-term move in gold, then honestly, how much more do you expect? I know there are narratives and theories out there about why it should continue to go move exponentially to the upside. I'm not sure I buy that. It is still in a strong uptrend and we'll still hold on to it. And I think there is some more upside to go, but when you're more constrained, range bound, like commodities are, it's hard to expect, you know, kind of that unlimited upside that you might have with equity markets more theoretically. So, gold, again, it's been boring, but it had such a great move that I think expectations got a little bit maybe ahead of themselves. Silver, as you mentioned, I think is in the position of maybe playing catch up. We are approaching, we had a nice breakout recently, approaching what could be just looking at SLV, the ETF, maybe some resistance around that 61 retracement from that 2011 top. That would be up around 34. But other than that, there's really no price resistance really in the last decade plus ahead of it. So I see better opportunities maybe there than gold right now. Coppers, and as you mentioned, kind of towards the upper end of its range. Crude oil testing, really the bot after broke down a little while ago below those multi-year lows, kind of testing that breakdown point now. So I'm not sure that crude is really out of the woods to the upside yet. So we're playing that one cautiously. Nat gas, range bound, like you said, a lot of these commodities range bound. And then uranium looks great to us. We talked about it last time I was on, especially URA. The ETF recently did break out above a series of highs that we've seen going back the last couple of years. So that does definitely opens up some further upside in the near term. So not necessarily be chasing it higher, but certainly opens up more upside, and we have a healthy position in that one, and we'd certainly be looking to buy or add to that position on pullbacks towards that breakout level.
Just a quick follow-up on that uranium comment, Dana. What about the nuclear stock? So it's kind of a different ballpark in that they're more of a tech company building small modular reactors, but there's a couple stocks like NuScale Power, NANO Nuclear, and Oklo that have been on big rips. Are you playing that side of the equation at all?
Not specifically, but open to that, and certainly open to anything in a relative strength status as far as our fund selection model is concerned. Anything that is hitting new highs would certainly be detected on that screen. And like I said, I think this equity market is due for a bit of a breather or a continued breather here for a little while. And anything pulling back towards breakout levels, any relative strength sectors that be pulling back towards those breakout levels or support levels, we certainly would be looking to add some of our cash we're sitting on, about 20% of cash in our portfolio, waiting for better entry points, waiting for better opportunities in some of those types of names that you mentioned.
And I'm really curious about what you're seeing in some of the charts that are the ETFs that track some of the commodity stocks. I'm looking at copper and silver, COPX and SIL. Volume has exploded this year. It's double at least in both of those ETFs, which to me shows a lot more interest in the sector. But then you look at something like gold stocks, GDX, GDXJ. There's no spike in volume. Volume's actually pretty depressed. So, do you get any insights on where the charts are going, or do you read anything into the fact here that we have much higher volume in copper and silver stock ETFs, gold stock ETFs, not so much? What's going on?
Yeah, to be honest, I don't look a ton at volume, or I don't necessarily put a ton of stock, no pun intended, when it comes to volume and this investment or trading decisions. It's more anecdotal. We don't have it built in. We have a little bit of it built into our models, but not a heavy link because I've never found a way to really a volume to a big extent in terms of our decision making. What I will say, more anecdotally, is certainly there tends to be more volume on the way down, especially in big moves, and on the way up. So when you talk about low volume moves to the upside versus declines, I don't get all worked up about that because that's generally how markets work. The downside is more emotional. You get more volume. And then on the upside, I will say if you get well above average volume at the beginning of a rally, I think that can be a very good sign of sustainability going forward. So I do look for anecdotally again examples of that. And I think maybe some of the GDX, GDXJ, I think you had a little bit of an example of that maybe back in the spring around April when they're starting those moves. So that I did like that about those moves in the gold stocks. When you mentioned something about silver miners, SIL, one red flag tends to be when you have a spike in volume to the upside after you've seen a huge move. So I don't know that we've seen a huge move in silver miners. We just got a recent breakout. So I would expect volume to come in following that type of breakout. But I would be a little bit wary of big volume moves when it comes after an extended rally. So again, I'm not saying this move is over, but you got more of the spike in volume after it had a big move relative to what we saw in GDX, GDXJ. So I guess net net, I would be more positive in terms of the volume signals that we saw from the gold miners than I would necessarily from the silver miners. At this point, I wouldn't be bailing out of silver miners, certainly, but I wouldn't get more aggressive because I'm seeing more volume flow into it. I would be more aggressive based on the chart, based on the price movement, but not necessarily because we're seeing a ton of volume come into there.
Well, Dana, just one more follow-up on these ETFs, because a lot of people listening to the show track these and are invested in these. When you look at something like GDX, it's actually in a pretty solid uptrend. It's been making higher highs, higher lows. It got above its peak from a couple of years ago. And you see the same thing in SIL for the silver stocks. But when you look at GDXJ and SILJ, it's a little different picture. When you get down to the juniors, it's a little wonkier, but it's GDXJ just barely got above its highs from 2020. It's nowhere close to its all-time highs. And SILJ has struggled in comparison to SIL. Now, those are maybe more of they're not really juniors, they're more of the mid-tier stocks. But do you look at those kind of divergences between GDX and GDXJ and SIL and SILJ?
Certainly, at least maybe not for a broad signal, but certainly in terms of comparing one versus the other. So yeah, definitely I'd rather be seeing, new highs for the last decade or so, like you mentioned with the larger miners, but also GDXJ just recently breaking out above that 2020 high. So that's a great sign for me that we've got more extended upside. And I do like kind of the solid, like you mentioned, the solid trend that we're seeing in the gold miners, whether the juniors or GDX. We're seeing, that stair step kind of deliberate rally where we're seeing higher highs, higher lows. You're not seeing kind of the spiky action that we've seen at times over the years where you have a spike up and then immediately it's shot down and pretty much that's all she wrote. You're seeing more of a higher high and then the ability to sustain that higher high or higher low, which to me hints at maybe a stronger bid, more of a solid bid under the market and perhaps a more sustainable move to that. And then like you mentioned with the junior silver miners, the SILJ really stuck in resistance that we saw really in 2024, but also earlier in the decade. So certainly more work to be done in terms of that one, which is why we've got much smaller position on in that than we do in the other miners ETFs, where we've really cleared a lot of that resistance. Now you have the opportunity to play catch up in that one. And if that happens, then we can reassess. But I would stick to those funds and those sectors and those ETFs that have cleared a lot of that resistance and continue to hit higher highs and higher lows.
All right, Dana, that wraps us up for this weekend show. Thank you very much, as always, for sharing what your models are showing you within markets globally and in the US, as well as diving into the commodity sector. And everyone, thanks for tuning in to this weekend show. Please be sure to go back through our website, kereport.com, or find us on your podcast player. Just search The KE Report. You can also find us on YouTube, where you can listen to all of our daily editorials and company updates from throughout the week, as well as this full weekend show. Everyone, I hope you all have a great rest of your weekend, and we'll be back with you all on Monday covering market moves and key company updates.
The Cortland Economics Report is produced for AB Cortland and Associates. Opinions expressed on this program are intended solely for the entertainment of our listeners, do not constitute investment advice, and are not necessarily those of this network, radio station, or our sponsors. Find out more about this program and today's guests by visiting www.kereport.com. For Al Cortland, this is Colleen Robbins. Join us again next week for the Cortland Economics Report.